Here we go. Call meeting order. And we have all members in attendance, correct?
Yes.
And let's see. Ready the attendance. We have Legislator Lopez, Guerrero, Archer, Gregorius, and myself, Donaldson, is present. And I entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make the motion.
All those in favor?
I can't vote on it. I wasn't here.
No problem.
Wait a second.
Yes, Mary Laura. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. All right. So before we go into the resolutions, I know there's some people that. Was there somebody that came that, Craig, that you wanted to speak?
Yeah, they were going to come last time, but I couldn't make it, so we had postponed the resolution 350, and I had invited them back.
And they're here?
Yes.
Okay. And is that you? Okay, please introduce yourself and say what you wish, except for don't curse at me too much.
Okay, my name is Joellen Saffron, and I wasn't quite sure what the format was going to be as far as, I want to talk about Common Core and resolution, actually, 350. I wanted to share some information. I'm not sure what your familiarity is with kind of the history of Common Core, and I wanted to share some thoughts on why I think full repeal is necessary, and why I want to encourage you to move up this resolution so that it can come forward to the full legislature for discussion. I think you all know that there were several of us who came to the full legislature in October, and we shared a lot of kind of personal stories. So I wanted to kind of focus a little bit more on some more factual stuff and history kind of stuff. If you know all this information and I'm going on and you say, no, we know all that, then please let me know and I can move on. But basically, at the root of what this is about, and I do tend to kind of be passionate about this, so I won't curse, I promise. Sometimes I do get a little carried away and a little teary-eyed, so ignore that part. But I really feel that Common Core and racist talk really needs to be repealed because at the root of all, it's really bad for the kids. And I got involved with this, and I think a lot of people kind of in our area, really, it started kind of coming to the fore back in 2012. I think for New York, the people just kind of, as things started being rolled out in the school systems, that's when families and stuff, I think, really kind of started to feel some pain associated with the changes that were being put in place because of Common Core. And some of the things that they were feeling were there was stress associated with as kids were having to take these tests, kids were feeling stupid. Some of the things that we talked about in October, there's some developmentally inappropriate things that are associated with the standards that I can go into if you feel that's appropriate. I'll mention a little bit later about some of the things. And things would go on, but it all it started earlier than that. And actually, a lot of the what's been going on started back with No Child Left Behind and the changes that were put into place with that system and the increases in the testing at that point and the concept of trying to force kids to meet certain goals and basically force this outcome on every child. And the concept might be good. It's like, yes, we want to offer the same opportunity to every child, but you can't legislate outcomes of every child. Every child is going to achieve this particular goal. And I think that's one of the root problems with the system overall. But it took a while for things to kind of roll along and snowball through. But I think there are people who know that the average person, parent, wasn't aware of what was going on. And as things continued on through history, there were different groups involved with things. And I have various resources, and if you want to read them, I'd be happy to send you a link for people who have written about a lot of these different things. But the Common Core specifically really kind of came into a head with a couple of groups that you might have heard of. In 2009, with the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Operators. And these two groups are important because they were the groups that kind of oversaw the development of the Common Core standards. And they're important because they're the groups that are talked about as being the state-led groups, because these are the groups that represent each of the states, and so these were standards that were developed by the states. However, these are actually really trade organizations. They aren't really representatives of each state that are bringing teachers and local people and everything all together to come and create these standards that are well-researched and that, you know, are something that are going to be good for our kids. So it was really kind of this business venture that was put together. And then along with it, there was this race to the top money that was tied into the package that was used to entice the states, which were all struggling with what had come along from No Child Left Behind and approaching the time where they had to meet the goals that had been put in place with No Child Left Behind and not being successful at getting all those kids to that 100% goal. And so there was a waiver opportunity and the race to the top money that was being offered and said, here, you can have this money if you accept, you know, sign up for this application and you get a certain number of points and, you know, there's different ways to have it. But you have to agree to these couple different things. And it was as part of signing up for the application, they had to agree to not only accepting the Common Core standards, which actually haven't even been written at this point in 2009 yet. They were still being developed. But they had to agree to the student assessments, so testing. They had to agree to a data collection system, a longitudinal data system, and collect a boatload of information on the students, a teacher appraisal system, and also a system to turn around failing schools, which is a lot of where a lot of the charter school stuff comes into the picture. So that was all part of the picture that was kind of this Common Core situation that came on the scene. And our governor at the time, Governor Patterson, and the Commissioner of Education, Mills, did sign the application for the Race to the Top money. And New York did end up getting awarded some of the Race to the Top money. And so we were brought into this Common Core world. Without actually having our local people, teachers, anyone involved in the discussion, is this really what is going to be in the best interest of our students or anything? And so there's a lot of arguments that you might hear in different kinds of things about, you know, state-led and some of the things that are mentioned in the resolution about the terminology and that sort of thing. And you can read about different kinds of things. And it is particularly difficult in New York because Commissioner King is a very strong advocate for the Common Core standards. And so he will say, yes, you know, it was state-led because he is a strong proponent for them. Unfortunately, many of your teachers and your people on the streets who are living the lives of having our kids going through these standards and having to deal with them and seeing how it is impacting our educational system is seeing a whole different world. And that is really, I think, why I feel so passionately that we need to have a discussion at a county level and be able to say, how is this impacting our county? I am a part of the Kingston School District. We have been having discussions about this within our school district. At some level, I do have a little bit of contact with a few people from other school districts. I am also part of several statewide groups where there are people who are you know, very involved in trying to bring about change in the areas of Common Core and getting rid of it. But I think we really need to have the discussion about what is it doing here, because I mean, we have, you know, all of these different school systems, each of which are being impacted differently. And I know that, in fact, I have had the opportunity to talk with a few of the superintendents, and it is different in each school district. Each school district has a different number of students, a different way that they've chosen to implement things, different ways they're responding to the testing, how the amount of pressure they're putting on their teachers and their staff, how much they're allowing their teachers to speak about the impact in the classrooms. I mean, teachers in Kingston tell me, we can't say anything. We're afraid for our jobs if we do say something. And so, it's different from place to place. And I think we need to have those discussions and be able to look at it. And then I hope, you know, that bring that on to Albany and say, no, we need to be able to make our decisions at a local level. What is it that's going to work for us in Ulster County to educate our children? And there are ways that we can assess. The resolution talks about national assessments, if we need those kinds of things. We have this sampling, because standardized tests, honestly, according to the research, are not a good way to determine how a student is teaching. They might be able to tell how a student does on a test, but as far as how the teacher does, because of that problem of determining, can you make the child learn this information? You know, there's just so many issues here that are involved with all of these things. And one of them that, I don't know if you have young children or not, and my children are actually being older, but one of the things that people talk about over and over is the developmentally inappropriateness of the standards, and that particularly comes in for the youngest children. And one of the things that really makes me particularly sad is when the standards were being developed, there were 500 early childhood professionals who submitted a letter indicating concerns about how this would impact young children, and it was ignored. And so it's like, why was that ignored? I mean, and what are we going to do about it? And there isn't a process in place at all for the standards to be modified or changes made. So why did we sign on to this, and how do we get out of it? Because it's not working, unfortunately. So I just want to add, I mean, things are not working. I don't believe it's just an implementation issue. I believe that it really is a fundamental issue, and that is why I'm here to advocate for, we do need the full repeal. There have been changes attempted at Albany, and go through the history of, you know, the bills that have been done and different actions that have been placed with this information that you want to hear about. But you know, that's not, I think, getting at the root of the problem, and it really, I think, is just the fundamental flaws associated with the standards, and what do we need to do, and what can we, as a county, do to be able to establish control for the education of our kids and be the primary educator. Governor Cuomo had one of his campaign commercials talked about, it was, I don't know if you haven't saw it, but everything was all in white, so it was a very memorable commercial. And it talked about that the parents should be the primary teachers of the kids. And that's not consistent with the system that we have in place, because our teachers, parents are telling us that it's not working. There is another aspect which I'm sure is very important to you. I don't specifically have a lot of data on it because I'm not a data person, but the costs associated with it, and the costs are a huge factor that I think as a county is another important issue. I mean, Common Core is essentially another unfunded mandate, and it's something that that as we've looked at in Kingston, Dr. Catalina, our superintendent, has gotten very creative in a lot of ways, and has come up with different ways to be able to not cut all of our different programs. We do still have music and that sort of thing. But, some schools are losing those kinds of programs, and as we continue to have to do this, we haven't gotten to the point yet of having to do all of our testing on the computers. I'm not quite sure what, if we have to get to that point, which I think is like the ultimate goal, where that money is going to come from. So the money issue is another big, big concern for the Common Core stuff as well. So I could go on for a long time, but is there anything else?
Anybody else want to talk on this issue?
I just like to say, my name is Maria Norta. Basically, what Common Core is a one-size-fits-all program. I have two kids. One's a regular ed, almost high honors kid, and then I also have a child with an IEP. They cannot learn the same thing at the same time when they're at the same grade. It just doesn't happen. You look at them, the teachers are told, okay, this is what you have to do. They were once called modules, and now they're called units. They basically are just revamping them. They're, trying to get the parents to say, oh, we're changing them a little bit. But if I sit there with my third grader, my fifth grader would be like, yeah, I can do that. That's no problem. But my child with an IEP, you have to take a lot of time to sit there and go over and over and over it. She does not have the executive functioning in place, and her frontal lobe isn't established enough for her to get these concepts. She's a concrete thinker, whereas, she needs to know 2 plus 2 is 4. Why is it 2 plus 2 is 4? She just has to know that that's what you need to do, and that's what you got the end result. But what Common Core does is you have to have a reason behind it. You have to say, okay, you have to have 2 boxes here and 2 boxes there, and you have to show, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then put the number 4 next to it. So it's a multi-step process for something that was very simple. That's just a basic thing. But my children are from the same household, same parents, same socioeconomic status. They just don't learn the same at the same time. That's impossible. It's just impossible. My IEP child, there is no way that her teacher can be rated effective under their standards because she's going to score a 1. Her IEP is, her math is basically at a first grade level. She's in the third grade, yet she's mandated to take the third grade test. She has double time, which the normal time would be about an hour and a half, and she'd be there for an hour, 180 minutes, taking an exam that we know she's not going to pass, her teachers are not going to be effective, yet the teacher's going to get knocked, my daughter's going to have to sit there for however many hours repeatedly for ELA and math, and yet what's the end result? Everybody is frustrated. The teacher's frustrated, the children are frustrated, we've lost precious time from them sitting there proctoring exams, grading exams. Children are sitting there, they say some in Kingston they've allowed the children to, who have refused the exam, to sit in quietly and read a book or what have you. But that's time that they'll never get back. They're sitting there for these exams and they're just not going to get it.
Does anybody else have questions? I can make a comment on this myself. I just retired from teaching last year. I taught in Roosevelt High School. And I taught, I had 3 economics classes and 2 government classes. They're all seniors. But in each case, I had 1 government class that was an inclusion class and 1 economics class that was an inclusion class. And they had new, that's when all this stuff was beginning. And what they wanted, I had to give them a pretest. And the pretest had to be based on the actual final exam. So in other words, I had to show them what my final exam was ahead of time, which is, to me, idiotic, because my take on it is when I teach, I'm trying to teach them something, and in the end, I may accent more things than I do, 1 year I may accent something more than I do another year, because it's more of a hot topic. And as a result, in other words, I would then I would make my final exam maybe a week or two before the test. But anyway, I had to do it ahead of time, and I had to do these pre-tests. And I actually had two students that were in the inclusion classes that, you know, had IEPs, broke down and started crying. They actually started crying. These were seniors in high school. And then the next time they wanted me to do it, I said, every other refuse, I'm not doing it. Luckily for me, I was going to be retiring, but another teacher couldn't do that. And it shows that if they didn't learn that, that the teacher was ineffective. And I had a tradition that, in fact, I taught alternative classes for a while, and I always had a tradition. I took the kids that were having, you know, the kids that were little troublemakers and things like that. I enjoy them. I just have a, you know, I don't know why, I just enjoy them. I think they have more character. And what happens is that, you know, because of that, I mean, if I was starting teaching now, I would say, no, I don't want those kids. Because I'm going to be ineffective. Because those kids are not going to always get that. In other words, getting them to the two was a big deal, shall we say. In other words, so to me, in other words, I'm saying to myself, that's idiotic. You don't want us to teach. You want us to, and it's really being driven, in my opinion, it's actually being driven by book companies and these testing companies. That's what's driving this. Because they make the test. They make the solution. They've got the solution. I've got the solution. You pay for it. So, I mean, I empathize with you, and my daughter's a teacher at Kingston High School, so. And she was, in fact, was the elected the, you know, Teacher of the Year by the students, and then she has trouble with being effective, and it worries her unbelievable. And, you know, and I know my daughter's like a perfectionist. I mean, she's nothing like me, believe me. I'm much more loose about what I do, but she's very perfectionist, and it really worries her immensely.
Yes. Can I get a couple of questions? I don't know children, so I'll set them up, but knowing we were going to talk about this, I did a little research, so I'm just trying to understand the issues. You know, as with any change, you know, change is a little scary. It hurts. How we say, if it doesn't hurt, then you're not really changing. So I understand all the emotions wrapped up in this. And so my understanding of this was that it was to establish a common, broader framework for at what grade level, what knowledge should be attained at each of those grade levels, so that regardless of whether a child stays in their own system or moves to other systems, that there is less, there is a commonality around expectations at a given level. And that the first several years were to be setting baselines and understanding so they can start to measure teacher effectiveness, student learning effectiveness of the programs, et cetera. So I'm not sure, that's my understanding based on the research I did, I'm not sure where we're at in the process. And what, you know, I'm hearing a lot of concerns, and I'm not sure if it's a rollout of program and everybody, because my understanding is that at a local level, local being state, regions, et cetera, that there were what it takes to achieve a specific set of knowledge for each grade level is to be determined at these regional levels. And so if that's the case, I don't know, I'm asking. This is what I've gleaned from my research, so I'm looking for help to understand where am I in this process. Is that true? Is this correct? Are we still at a assessment stage to be able to measure effectiveness of a new way of looking at common expectations across the country and all in an effort to increase the knowledge of our children. So it sounds like a good thing, right? So help me.
Did you, this gentleman here, want to say something? Go ahead.
At all, Carly, the way to train the kids in school, my child's much older. But your research, what you looked at, but basically comes down to this. You want federal control of your education system, but the local control is done. Okay? Local control is done, state control is absolutely done. it's all going to come from the federal government, okay? And she mentioned inappropriate material for students. So that's not a rollout problem. That's what they rolled out. The other thing is, again, she mentioned this is great.
Excuse me, what's your name again?
Ed Altano, A-L-T-T-E-N-A-U, Lady Train. It was written after we passed it, after we accepted it. It was a money grab by the state government. Mm-hmm. And the state government at this point, the money's not coming in, but the cost associated with this program is tremendous. Okay, the testing alone has tripled the cost of all the testing. And there's no standard, as far as what you're saying is, you want to be able to standardize. There's some people in this room that are old enough that went to school years ago, okay, when you had local control until the mid-60s. And the standards were a heck of a lot higher, graduation rates were a heck of a lot higher, and the cost was minimal, okay? Since then, it's escalated, and it's escalating further. And my point, like I made initially, is you want federal control of everything. That's what you have with this. No state control, no oversight by the state.
So what I described as my knowledge of the program, you're saying is incorrect and
correct.
Not true.
I don't think that
what you said is incorrect. I mean, that is the goal that's been marketed for Common Core, and as I talked to a lot of teachers, and I mean there are a lot of teachers who like the idea of common standards around the country, and I think there's different educational philosophies. there are different philosophical.
I thought I understood the local way to execute against that is your prerogative, right?
The intent. Well, but you get into the thing, it's like if you are...
You lose the money if you don't do it the way...
Well, and if you have national standards, then how much control do you have locally? I mean, do you really have local control? For me personally, if you're being told from a federal level, you have to do this, do you really have local control anymore? I mean,
I'm not trying to argue.
Yeah.
I'm really trying own clarification. You're saying I expect you to understand this at this level, but how someone gets there, taking into account the different learning capabilities to get to that same level, isn't that what we're talking about? Or no?
The problem is, I think one of the major problems is they're not taking into account the. The different students, shall we say.
Yes.
Like I said, the IEP students that I had, they had to get within certain numbers or it would look bad on me, no matter how it went. And it didn't matter, in other words, if they were incapable of reaching that or not. It made no difference. It was that it still ran out that way. And that's what's... I think generally... There was a good mindset with this. The problem with it is that, we should have some type of move towards certain things, I guess. In other words, throughout the nation. I mean, we all should know certain things. As a American citizen, I agree with that certain concept. But in some cases, when this is different in that they're actually dictating so many things that it makes it impossible for a teacher really to teach. And as the gentleman there said, if I took a test, I taught U.S. history for quite a long time before I did economics, and I know the test that I took when I was in high school, that Regents exam test that I took, that test was so much more difficult to pass that test than the one that they run for the New York State Regents exam now. You can't compare. You gave that New York State Regents exam that I had to take, or many people, even after me, right up until 1980, when they started really changing them, the kids today would not be able to get those. because of their, I believe that we're pushing so much towards testing and no opting out. Like, for instance, at that time, not everybody was a Regent student. In other words, if you got a Regent's diploma, it really meant something throughout the country. If you came with it, like if you went to a college in Florida or wherever, if you had a New York State Regent's diploma, that really meant something. Today, it means diddly squat. It doesn't mean any difference if you got the Regent's diploma from New York or a diploma from Minnesota. It makes no difference. But at one time, it really, in fact, people complained about it because New York standards were so tough. Now New York standards are much easier. But they're forcing them to do certain things. I just see it as it's sort of like not a race to the top, it's a race to the middle.
Or the bottom.
Or the bottom. Legislator Lopez, I haven't spoken to you.
I didn't catch your name.
All the time.
All right. Okay. To touch on what you said a little bit, I think one of the biggest problems is that it's a federal program. It's a federal program that disguises the state initiative. And, it makes you think of how, I hate to use the slippery slope term, but, there's a number of people that are concerned because some will argue that's the violation of our 10th Amendment. Our 10th Amendment is, although it's not the most popular amendment, like the first and the second, but it limits the power of the federal government. And more specifically, there's a non-delegation of power clause that's in there that says specifically that if there is a right that gives power to the federal government, it's automatically given to the state. And this is the issue for me, and the issue with...
Well, education specifically by the Constitution was given to the state.
Right, and there's nothing in the Constitution that gives power to the federal government over our education system. I get accused of, perpetuating some right-wing conspiracy sometimes. Often when you invoke the Constitution and stuff, but this crosses party line. The New York State teachers union, agrees with that. They think it's a complete total overreach, and they're not the most conservative group in New York State. That's why I wanted to introduce this, in support of the pending legislation. I think it's tabled now, but just to reflect the concerns of the people that I speak to all the time. It's the teachers, the parents, not just the lawmakers. And the concerns they have, that it's bad for the parents, it's bad for the teachers, the taxpayers as well. Jolin had mentioned that we don't know how much it costs because it was part of Race to the Top. Race to the Top was put into the stimulus package, I guess, in 2009. And it's basically a $5 billion federal contest for people who, for states and school districts that perform law tests. Now, when that $5 billion runs out, who's going to be left to continue the Common Core standards? It's going to be states, and nobody knows how much that's going to cost. So, and like you said, it's yet another unfunded mandate. And there's other concerns, the data sharing and the data mining that, of our students who are now, it's not just going to be public, or they're not just going to share test scores, they're going to share other things like religious affiliation and political views. And, there's just, it's a slippery slope, and I that's why I would like to see those that legislation reintroduced and give the power back to the states and take it out of the hands of the federal government. So.
I'll be brief. I do child care, and the stress on the kids is unbelievable. I have kids that had 99 averages in math, and now they're getting 50. And their parents are curious and putting so much pressure on them. And they're getting the right answers, but they're not doing the right process. And so they don't understand if it's the right answer. Why do they not, get credit for that? So it's really, I see it on a personal level. It's not good.
Yeah, I'm going to second that. I'm a retired teacher working in the district, so. And I'll give you just one example. I was working with a third grader who was being taught mental math. So there's this process for doing it, which is very difficult to understand. The teacher taught it and asked if there were any questions. I actually asked a question because I said, you know, how do I choose which of these numbers I'm going to add something to so I can do this mental math and then add the number back in later? And he looked at the paper and he said, because it says it on the paper, which one? So I go to work with a child who can add these two-digit numbers. He adds the thing up, and he's got the right answer. Well, there's two reasons why he doesn't test well. He gets the right answer. He has to come up with some verbiage that explains all the steps of how he got that answer. But question 2, 3, and 4 ask, what was step one? What did you do in step two? What did you do in step three? So he gets the right answer. He can do the math with no problem at all. And he gets 3 out of 4 questions wrong on the test. I don't know what to say to this kid when he says, can I just add it? It's very disturbing.
I don't know that part because I never taught elementary school. And
there's
don't know
some other issues.
But I mean, there is that's something they usually learn when you start to do algebra. That's their purpose of. Because I actually taught algebra for a couple of years, and that's part of the idea of algebra. Needs you to do that. They want you to pick it apart how you did things. That's a developmental thing. It's something you learn when your mind is at a different stage.
Let me tell you an earlier. Okay, kindergarten and first, working on literature now, writing. They have to draw a picture, then they got to write a topic sentence and 2 or 3 pieces of information. It's great talking about it, you know, and the kids can really sometimes tell you the topic and give you some pieces of information, but they're expected to write it. So maybe a third of the class is still learning their letters, okay? So now they're writing gibberish on the line because they've got to work for 45 minutes in the class period writing the stuff. And the teacher's not supposed to help spell or help write this out. It's very difficult to work with this. And I don't have a kindergartner. I'm working with them in school. I don't know how they go home feeling about this. But if it was me doing it, and we did this every day, and I don't know the letters yet. I can't write 4 sentences, and nobody knows what I'm writing about. I don't know how this impacts the kids, because I don't live with one right now. But I feel really bad about it, trying to teach it. I have one other issue. I just want to just toss this one in. This is from reading. This is not from being in the school. But reading about the curriculum choices in the upper levels. There's this sense that all of the bad things that have happened in our history should be brought out. So, for instance, we're not really, in literature anyway, dealing with George Washington or Thomas Jefferson because they were slave owners. So their stuff is out. Their literature is really not being, you know, used as the main things that they read or the Constitution or all those things because those people that wrote that were slave owners. And we're bringing in other cultural things from other cultures. But I don't have any contest with, because I think learning about other cultures is fine. But when we put down all of the stuff from our culture and bring in all the stuff from other cultures without any of the bad stuff from those cultures, it's sort of like, oh, their writers are wonderful, so we're going to study this Spanish writer, we're going to study that writer, we're going to study that writer, but we're going to leave out Thomas Jefferson's writings and Washington's writings because they were slave owners. That's a message that...
Well, I don't think that's whoever already read that, that's, I don't think that's reality, but... Anyway, let's...
Eliminated all the constitutional writers.
I don't agree that that's the where it's gone. I think we're reaching a little bit on that one, but anyway, that's
I
mean
I think
if
you read
well, I, you know what, you're supposed to learn the good with the bad, you know what I mean? Otherwise, you're not, understanding history.
But that's what they're saying. They're taking that out.
You have to teach it. We have to teach the good and the bad, not just something.
Right, right, and I agree with that. Anyway, on the issue, I'd like to get zeroed in because, you know, we've got a number of things that's got to be done. Sure.
What you're asking us to do is to pass a resolution for the Oscar legislature to encourage our state representatives to take action. Are you taking action at the same time? This is a letter that goes into the full legal process.
That's what they're doing. They're attempting to take action on the state level.
Okay, that's fine.
They're advocates, but at this point...
Part one is a simple thing. You always raise our hand and say yes, and thank you very much, and off we go. But the real issue then comes as to who it is. Who's on the education committee? Who gets called? Who's calling? And organized, much as you've done here tonight, but those are the people that are actually going to make the decision, right? We'll make a decision to try and add to the goal that you're moving forward, but this is the easy part.
oh, definitely. Even up to Albany, we talked to the center.
Okay. All right, anyway, on the issue, do we have any feelings on how you want to vote on this at this point?
Well, I would ask if Senator Lopez would like other people to sign on to it as a sponsor.
Well, yeah. If anybody wants to sign on it,
I'd be happy to sign on to it.
Yeah.
And I had asked, I don't know why they didn't take it.
Yeah,
okay. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, this was.
That's fine.
Yeah, we'll change. Yeah, we'll let Vicki know.
Well, I have no problem with this. I agree. I may not agree with everything that was said, but I agree with the idea that this there needs to be an overhaul of this. It's not.
Are you
it's not working.
Sponsor?
Yeah, you can vote. I don't care. I'm where the other's fine. So anyway, on the issue, you want to call for a vote?
Sure.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Having none? All right. The next issue that I do, we have someone else that came. I met her the other night, and she wanted to speak before the committee in reference to college and daycare at college, right? Right. Introduce yourself, please, to the committee.
My name is Victoria.
Victoria?
Vaughn.
Victoria Vaughn, my friend.
I don't personally have children, but I have friends with children, and one of my best friends is considering having to withdraw from school because she cannot afford to pay for the daycare. It costs her $2,300 to send her daughter to daycare half debt.
Where is she going to daycare?
Here at SUNY Ulster.
She's at SUNY Ulster, okay.
Costs her more to send her daughter to daycare than it costs her to go to school. She applied for a grant, and they told her that they didn't have money for her because they only split it up. They give whoever applies for it gets all of the money, where what you would think that it would be, if they're given $20,000, you would think it would be broken up among, if 10 people need that money, it would be broken up again between the 10 people. But that's not how it works. So now she may have to withdraw from school because she can't afford it. It costs her $35 to send her daughter here for half a day. Some days she's only here for an hour, and she still has to pay the full $35. SUNY U-Falls charges an hourly rate. I know other private daycares that cost $35 for a full day. I mean, you would think that daycare at the college would be... There's a lot of single parents, single mothers, single fathers looking to better the situation. They should have somewhere to send their child to daycare for a reasonable price and not have to worry about maybe having to withdraw from school because they can't afford to pay for it.
Do you know where she applied for a grant?
Through the daycare. She has to do
through DSS?
No,
but DSS has the Department of Social Services has a child care unit that subsidizes childcare. Do you know if she applied there?
I'm not sure. I know she got the application from the daycare.
So it may have been from
there. It's not the college that does the grants.
Right.
So we don't make the rules for how those things are applied.
Right.
It doesn't really make sense the way you describe how it's done, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's how they do it.
Well.
But the one thing that she's bringing up is the idea that we have a New Falls that charges on the hour as opposed to like a half day, or in other words, did you find out about that?
I can find out if
that information.
See, the daycare is run via the College Association. I sit on that board also, so I can certainly bring this up to them. I would certainly welcome you to come to our board meeting, which is maybe next week. But I can certainly find your answers for that.
Yeah.
I can say this, competitively, cost-wise, we're not the highest around here.
Right, no.
We're actually one of the lower. Why we do that on purpose. Besides you. We don't want to put her out of business. So but we are really, in the marketplace, we're one of the lowest. It is not something that the college makes the money at.
Right.
If anything, the college is subsidizing it. It comes from our other sources. Yeah.
Most places are getting $40 a day.
Right, for a full day?
For a full day.
Well, Ulster gets between $48 and $55 for a full day.
Yeah. And is she considered going to a private daycare?
I've mentioned it to her because I personally know people who run have private, well, $35 for a full day.
Right.
And, but she goes here, she goes half a day. For the other places, they said, you know, it might not make sense for her to come because she would drop the kid off at 1 and pick her up at 2, where that she would be there while all the other kids are napping.
Right.
You know, well, there are days.
Convenience issue, too.
Yeah.
You know,
she,
school,
she comes here.
Right.
She just takes her daughter with her. And then she goes in there to pick her up every day, and they harass her about the money. And she says, when I have it, you'll be, trust me, you'll get it. She said, I just don't have it right now. So she says to me, you know, maybe I'll have to drop out of school. And I said, you shouldn't do that. Because then,
so do you know if she didn't qualify financially, or she didn't qualify because there's no funding?
They told her that when she applied for it, they told her she had 4 applicants. The college had 4 applicants for the grant, and when she brought her application back, they told her they had 7, and they wouldn't have the money for her.
If you call the child care, the child unit, the daycare unit at the county, they're really, really very helpful.
Okay.
And it doesn't usually work that way.
Right, that's what I
do. And I mean, there has been periods of time when there's been less money and there might potentially be a waiting list,
right,
or whatever, but it, you know,
right,
they get them. Because then there isn't, right?
That's an alternative to reach out to the county.
Right. And she was told that she's almost maxed out of her student loans because she has to take out extra, usually to pay for the daycare, but she wasn't able to do that this semester.
But I would have her call a child care unit and see, you know. Is Maria still the... Maybe she asked for Maria Ruffner. She's the supervisor. She's very helpful, and she could clear things up with, you know, about how things go, because I'm sure probably the application did go through there, and maybe there was a misunderstanding about how,
right,
you know.
Well, I'm assuming that the college has their own sort of a grants type of thing within
I don't believe so.
Not the relative to daycare.
No.
We're very restricted in what we're allowed to do. That's why it's run by College Association, which also oversees mandatory student activity fees and things like that. We have to have that separation. It's not our operation. It happens here on campus, but it's not the college's operation.
Yeah, because that's a lot of grant comes through the county. It is distributed through the county.
Mm-hmm. We're just chatting about everybody else was chatting. This is a single mom, and she's going to have to then withdraw, and if she can't get a job, she's going to wind up under the VICE program, perhaps. Well, she's going to get free daycare for the kids while she's coming to school.
Right.
So it seems there's an irony in here that we're now in a position of having somebody that can pay, and can come for whatever the reasons are, but the drain is from something that if you were just a little bit less financially successful, you would get for free. There's a disconnect. So I don't know who's getting paid. We get free transportation, we get free daycare, we get all that type of thing while they go to school, they're under the RISE program. So, okay, well, we're kind of getting toward where we may qualify for the RISE program, which is what we're trying to stop people going into that situation where they would get it for free. So there's got to be some way that we can figure out how to prevent somebody who's paying and working or getting the money to do.
Mary, do you you have contacts there, social services,
yeah,
when it comes to that?
Mm-hmm.
Would she be able to give you a call?
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
And but I also think, though, because I think, I'm sorry, to the point that Don was making, which is if a minor adjustment to allowing someone to pay hourly could have an impact on this person, how many others? And
Right, that's something that
the foundation would be willing to look at that could solve or remedy the problem.
Let me say something about that people don't understand about child care and the licensing process and that whole thing. There's limited numbers. So that spot, your employees and your overhead is the same whether they're there for an hour or not. If you can juggle it, you know, if it comes in the morning, comes in the afternoon, then stuff is fine. But if you can't, there's no, you know what I mean? There's no way to keep it, the lights on, because, you know, and that's, a lot of times people have a problem, you pay for a spot, usually, because there's no way you can,
there's no way you could say,
like, if you decide not to come today, I can't go, well, somebody else will come, they can't.
Have people there.
So that's another factor, you know, that,
right, because if the one person shows up and another one shows up, now all of a sudden you're outside the state standards because you don't have enough people there because they had one person there.
Right. And also, and the number of children you can have is specific.
Yeah.
It's finite. And it doesn't matter. You could have a one-on-one, and you still can't have more than whatever your rate, whatever your max number is.
So. But she was saying they were doing it at New Paltz. So if there's a way that they figured out how to work that, it'd be something that could be applied. That's
New Paltz is a lot bigger than us.
Maybe that's the reason.
Exactly how they're going.
Yeah. And they may also have a different income, you know, a limit.
New Paltz has 10 times
the any outside community, you've only got, we've got a waiting list.
Yeah, they've
only
got 10 times
a week. Yeah,
yeah,
but
lucky
to have
you as a friend.
Yes.
But I know what I was saying. But also, through the child care reimbursement, you know, for daycare, it doesn't always have to be a licensed daycare provider. It could be someone else can also be paid.
Right.
So if she had someone that could do that small amount of time, I mean, they have to register and that
right,
and
I don't think she does.
And they make a little lower thing, but she doesn't have that.
But I mean, I understand if it were to be hourly, you know, you set up the hours based on your schedule. And then I know, like, if the kid is sick and she doesn't bring her, she still pays that $35.
Right.
So even if she doesn't bring her, you know, saying she's supposed to go for 3 hours on Tuesday, she would still pay for those 3 hours, even though she didn't. So it wouldn't be like, you know, I'm not coming today, I'm not going to
say. Right.
But are there any suggestions for what she should do for the rest of this semester to pay them? Since she is struggling with that, you know, she has to pay rent, she has to pay for diapers, everything for a kid.
Well, what are you doing tomorrow? And well,
I babysit her daughter for free. So she can,
now, where does she live?
She lives.
Very good. All righty, thank you for your time. And let me know how it works out, will you? Now we have, let Ian, you want to speak on the one issue that you got to deal with?
You do. The factory contract that we have before this, one I mentioned last year. So it's a 4-year deal, which has been ratified by the membership. It was not last time.
Resolution 399.
Highlights, it's a 4-year agreement with an increase of 1.5% in years 1 and 2, 1.75% in year 3, and 2% in year 4. We were inserting language that all factories that are hired after 10/1/2014 are required to pay 20% of their health insurance premium. That's a request from the county
executive. In an attempt to standardize, where's that one? 399. This is 399.
Okay.
No, yeah, but it's 399 or 395.
395.
All right, no problem. All right, anybody want to speak on the? The contract?
It's kind of.
What should you do?
We've had another one that's
right.
With the county.
It's creating the standardization of trying to make it 20% pay. And in the end, are they really getting a raise? Oh, well.
Well, and they already made some adjustments to the insurance. That's the only adjustment to the contract, but they did have a couple of others.
All right, anybody entertain a motion to accept this?
Good.
Moved by Craig Lopez, seconded by John Gregorius. All those in favor?
Aye.
Carries. All those against? No.
Are you saying more colleges shifting a portion of the cost to the employee?
That passed. We go into Resolution 395 is another one that deals with the Common Core and introducing the idea that someone that children with IEP were able to opt out of the Common Core standards, which certainly makes sense. That was something that used to be done, you know, under the old days. It made sense. So, I mean, I don't know if anybody wants to talk about it. Giving somebody that has an IEP the ability to opt out of the Common Core test, which basically would be covered in 350 anyway. But, I mean, I'll support it. I'll move it. Anybody else? All right. On the resolution, any problems? All right.
All right.
All right. All those in favor? Aye. Against? I think you heard that. Yes.
I have a basic question. How does this work in charter schools? Do they get their own standards or what?
They can opt out of a lot of it. I think that's what the other push is actually to help create more charter schools. That's a byproduct of it is an attempt to create more charter schools.
Right. I'm going to make this in mine. The other one is 395, so you couldn't do it. It's supposed to be $3.99.
Just so you know, we marked the other one. It said $3.95, but it's actually $3.99. Okay?
Can I just ask a question? Are you aware that anyone can opt out of the testing?
Right now.
Because it feels like, if you're saying the IEP student can opt out, it feels like we're saying, well, the Common Core is fine. We just need to sit the kids out of the thing so that we don't have their testing dragging us down. And I feel a little iffy about that. I really feel that it's almost saying, well, maybe the Common Core is okay. We'll just take all those kids out and drag down our testing scores. I don't want to have to deal with them.
In the end, is it education or is it
the parent can opt out?
The whole thing is
Well, the parent can opt him out. Right. Everybody, but
then that also reflects on the teacher when the parent opts out. My fiance, she's a special ed teacher, and yeah, she deals with the IEP situation all the time, and it's difficult. And then when parents are telling their kids or when the parents are having their kids opt out, reflects on their performance. And like you said, I totally agree with allowing them to opt out because they would be dragging down the scores, but that just, adds to the whole.
Well, the other problem with it opting out is you can opt out with a data miner. When a student puts their name in that paper, they get a number, which will follow them all the way through their lives, all the way through college and everything else. And all their parents' finances and everything else, all from the problem.
My granddaughter doesn't write her name. All their papers.
That's the other side of there's no reason to write it. Well, parties, religious affiliations, what they make, things like that.
Alrighty. Anyway, we have a number of things that we want to look at. We still have a couple of resolutions, but before we go to those, Lee, the increase that you were requesting, we did put in an amendment, and did talk to the county executive in reference to the amendments that we put in, and he did assure me that he would call me before he starts making the phone calls to knock it out. And I'm hoping that is the reality, but I don't know, but. We've put in for what you requested, 37, and hopefully it'll happen. I've made some calls to some members of the Finance Committee, and hopefully other members of the committee could do the same, call some members of the Finance Committee to assure that this happens. How many total employees do you have right now?
35. 35. Some of them are full-time. Most of them are full-time. I have some part-time, and then I have grants. Folks that come in
and
out. So we're usually between 35 and 40.
Okay, 35 and 40, okay. Mm-hmm. So you do better than the IDA.
So well, the number, so we're putting in an amendment, just so I'm clear.
Yeah, we already did, because when we had the discussion, we said we were going to do it. What happened? She didn't, it actually didn't happen. So I made sure it did happen last week, so it's all right.
Well, on behalf of the staff and the board of directors, I want to thank you so much for your support. In the meantime, we are, working on the 2015 budget, and we'll plan accordingly in order to make some of the deficits that we've had for the past 2 years. We have eliminated a couple of positions, and I'm hoping not to eliminate any more. And with the price of oil being just a tad less, well, hopefully it's a lot less than he stays there. And if we don't have a really hard winter again, that should be really helpful as well. Programming-wise, all kinds of things are going on. We had a session today on understanding the Farm Bill that was really well attended by industry people, folks that support the farm industry and farmers as well. So it was well received. The Farm Bill is, like most federal legislation, difficult to read and comprehend, and figure out how it's going to affect individuals at this level. So that's what this session was about. There'll be some additional sessions that are coming up as well. It's not so great from dairy farmers, from what I understand. But we don't have a lot of dairy farmers here in Ulster County. We do have one young man who took that old adage of observe the masses and do the opposite. His family was raising replacement heifers, and he decided he's going to college here. And hopefully will really do well. He doesn't particularly like school, but he knows that it's important. And is renting a barn and milking cows, which is kind of unusual. So then he goes into that. Long-time 4-H'er and whatever.
Raw milk.
What's that?
Raw milk industry?
No. He has his milk picked up. Matter of fact, he is doing so well that his tank no longer can contain all that he, whatever. So there's a couple of brands out there that we're hoping to work with him so that he can get the equipment that he needs. But he's gotten his numbers down to the point where there's a certain level of numbers that they look at in the dairy farming and the DHA number and whatever, and certain level of bacteria and stuff like that that you definitely want to be down below. And he has reached that goal and has set his goal even lower. So you know, we're really very proud of him. And we have a whole lot of support for him in the dairy industry out of Ulster, because with only 6-7 working dairy farms, it's hard to support that. But we have him tied into regional dairy cooperative extension information, so he gets it out of Orange County, which is great. We have an annual meeting coming up on December 4th. We'll be at our office. This is just a calendar of events of some of the things that are happening in November and December. The annual meeting is going to be on the speaker is going to be Liz Higgins, who is our Ag Program Leader. She's going to give a talk on agriculture, the history of agriculture in the Hudson Valley. She just put something together for Ellenville Library, and it was so well received that we decided that instead of bringing in an outside speaker, we're going to use one of our own. She's done a really phenomenal job of putting together some stuff, talking about how agriculture has been incredibly important to Ulster County since its very beginnings, going back to when the Native Americans first settled here. One of the reasons why they settled here is because of the riverland, which is extremely fertile. If you look at the flag of the County of Ulster, you'll notice that it is ag-based. A jeep that's hanging there, and they burned the city of Kingston in 1777. One of the reasons why was the British were interested in coming here to destroy what we had was the city of Kingston was one thing, but they really came here to destroy the barns that were holding all of the wheat that they were using to feed the colonists. So really kind of fascinating. So you might want to put that on your schedule. We'll be electing new board and program committee members at that meeting as well. The meeting doesn't take long, so you know, you don't have to sit through a whole lot of stuff and whatever, but the talk should be really good. In the meantime, most of you know Mary Marsters, who has come here with me for the past couple of years. Mary's worked for us for about 5 years. She came with a great background in grants and contracts, was instrumental in applying for and succeeding in not only getting the grants and contracts, but helping to manage them. She retires at the end of this year, which I'm still in denial over. So you won't be seeing her coming to these meetings anymore. She leaves quite a legacy. We're not going to refill her position. She's been training folks for the past year or so that hopefully we will have additional folks that have at least some of her capabilities of working with the grants and contracts and applying for them. We're really pretty good at managing them, but tracking them and getting them and being able to write for them is the key in any organization that works with grants and contracts. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about other things that we're doing. There's programming going on everywhere. We just hired a new nutritionist who's coming in, who will be working with our Eat Smart New York program, one of our nutrition programs. That program we've done for the past 16 years. It was just revamped by the feds and the state. So I had to let go of the people who were working in that grant because they did not have the degrees that they were looking for in the new grant. Same stuff for teaching, highly trained folks, but be that as it may. So we cut two folks back down to half time. One person lost their position, but has since been hired by the county and doing really well there, so I'm excited about that. And we hired someone with the right degree. It should be starting November 17th. So that will add to our nutrition capabilities for what we lost. It'll help make it up. And this program is now regional. It's really being run out of Cornell Cooperative Extension in Orange County, but the person that we're hiring is an Ulster County CCE employee. So the answer to us and whatever, but will work as a team member in regional. And that seems to be the way a lot of our programs are going. In order to attract bigger dollars and more dollars, they're looking for, most funders are looking for a bigger reach. So so we're honing our skills in being able to do that. So we have right now 4 grants out of our 38 that are regional. And I'm thinking that they're going to be increasing. The good thing about those grants is that the way we write them is we retain the ability to, I don't want to say control, but to manage what happens here in the county. So just like this particular grant that we're doing with Orange County, the employee is an employee of Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County and a team member here, so and housed here as well. So as long as we can do that, you know, we'll be good to go. And so those are the kinds of things that we're looking for. We just restarted the a new 5-year grant with New York City DEP, with the Ashokan Watershed Project. With that grant, we wrote into that a position for the Department of the Environment, and so they will be hiring a, not an engineer,
planner
that will be working with the Department of Planning in the Department of Environment that will be focusing on the watershed. Which is great. So DEP wanted, we think that's going to be really helpful to the county in coordinating all of their watershed efforts, certainly in the watershed. And then we're looking for, I'm thinking that there's going to be dollars coming by for the lower ASOPIS and more watershed things as well. It'll position us for that so that we'll be set up to kind of go in and be able to take what we've learned in the upper ASOPIS and then use it down in the lower ASOPIS.
Alrighty, any questions? Alright, let's move on. We have a couple resolutions yet. Resolution 392, setting a policy offering discounted UCAT fares to veterans. Now, although I have no problem with creating this, but the problem is, we could pass this, but I really think it should go over to the committee that deals with public transportation.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I had just a question with, you know, where did the time frame come from? I mean, why the time frame that
I looked at it briefly. I believe he was mentioned. I didn't speak to the sponsor, but I think he matched it up. So that's just coming off of the seniors. So in that time period and that 70% fare increase for seniors. So I suspect that
it was just mirroring that.
Which I think is reasonable. I don't think that's a.
Yeah, I think it's a problem. But I do think that it, I don't know about the rest of you, but I really think it, the committee that, follows the public transportation part of it really should be also weighing in on this.
Well, surprise,
they're on here.
Yeah.
Well, economic development, right? Service and housing, planning and training.
Okay, so did it pass there?
So that's the first.
I don't think
392?
We didn't look at it yet. We
have a good. Then that's fine. I was concerned because today, well, I didn't see it checked off, so that's fine. So I'll check that. All right. Well, anybody have any comments on it?
I've actually never done that. I assume that two members have had a couple things on the budget.
Say that again.
I should highlight some departmental issues in the budget that are.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no problem. But let's deal with this issue first, then, okay?
Sure, sorry.
All right, I'll entertain a motion to accept this resolution.
I'll make a motion.
All right. And I'd like to be added as a sponsor on it.
Yeah, so would I. Yeah, me too.
But it's all in sponsorship with you now.
This is on the battery tab.
Yes.
Our physical was like $3,000 or
something. Yeah, it's like $3,400.
It's not an expensive item, so.
Yeah. Right, and it's, you know, it's a good thing.
Small, it's a small payment.
We like the new cattle will adjust fares later on this year anyway, so.
Yeah, and it's a,
the right thing to do.
Small thank you.
It's a nice tie-in. If you have your favorite car or a new driver's license, it's a good return.
Alrighty, so all those in favor? Aye. Any opposed? No. Alright, so that goes back over to the Economic Development Committee anyway. Alright, did you want to throw those in now, Ken?
There's a couple items I want to highlight. We've done some extensive programming. At the Technical Services Agency, the committee approved the deputy director's position that we filled later in the summer. We incorporated that for a full year in the budget. There's some changes in the budget.
Could I ask you a question about that? Now, is the new deputy director, is he also taking applications? Is he filling applications out?
Yeah.
Because I know the person before, they did have people that, they sometimes would get short. And somebody there actually making the application. So,
I think the next gentleman that we hired, that's Keith Bennett.
Yeah, I know Keith.
And he's really doing tremendous amount of work. Definitely, he actually has to go get certified training before we can do the UVA application that's happening. And they have companies we need to go for training. So, absolutely, he's doing casework. He's been out in the field.
He's already so connected to the community. Yeah, he's a fixture there.
He's doing a great job. So we have positions for the incorporated budget. There's some adjustments for increased burial costs, both for the indigent burial and also for work at the cemetery. I don't know if the committee's been down to the cemetery. So lately, I was there with staff several months ago, and it's starting to age a little bit, and have some wear and tear. The stones don't line up the way that you'd expect to see it in kind of a pristine setting of a Lincoln cemetery. So we included some funds to make sure that we can just realign it, upgrade some of the plantings. Over time, the grass is all different. It's not. At least when the county executive, I think we feel the same way, was what we wanted for the county. So we included some funds to be able to supplement what the cemetery does through the overarching contract and address that as well, too. You're going to see on the Office for the Aging side, you'll see two different things. The senior fees worker and a future for the aging. And that's a direct result of the aging for 26% since the census. So really expanding in that area. Also with the...
Did you get added state money?
There's funding, but it's in the 30-35% range. It's not a tremendous amount. So there's some county dollars in there to support those ballot teams. Again, there's just a tremendous demand at the department. So we put together a plan to try to address that and move that forward. So again, that's funding that we wouldn't have in any year. Two staff positions there, and then also that contingency. And it's not terribly new for the budget, but there's money for the secretary. There's also money in the budget to support the creation of a memorial for fallen soldiers, soldiers who died in combat during all the wars in the county. This committee working with the legislative archers on the committee working on that. Mary Larson, sorry. There's been a lot of work around that. They've already identified over 1,000 names to go on the memorial. The design committee's working as well, too. They had this wonderful vision, and we're trying to...
Where is the memorial going to be at the cemetery?
The coming office building. What our plan is let the committee do their work, and then I told the committee that we'd like them to come present to this committee and or... the full body of legislation to get their approval. So it's kind of like we put a plug number in the budget
to pay for them and all the support that's
so not from the vision to the reality.
There was an internal flame in the first draft that I said that was a little too much. We also have some access issues. We want to make sure that it doesn't restrict any access to the building, make sure that it kind of fits that footprint. There's some underground vaults that are on the front property of the county where they used to be part of the old foundation. Yeah, so we have to work around some of those structures as well, too. But my expectation is that they'll finish their work and come into presentation.
Now, where are they getting all the names from? Because I actually spoke with it's a neighbor of mine that her brother died in World War II, and he never got on the. He was actually from East Fish, but he never got on the thing in East Sophis because they'd been moved in Kingston, and it was sort of like he got fell between the cracks.
Ira Weiner, who's the residential commander, he's chairing the research committee. There's extensive work with them. We hired two interns who were involved with the veteran services here at the college that are doing a lot of
work. All right, well,
and there's also going to be a brochure that goes out so that people can self-identify folks and their family.
I would ask if you could have your contact. If you want to shoot me an email, I'll make sure.
I'll talk to her. She's not, it's not the type of person that.
The committee members have all been assigned. Council supervisors are working with us. We've actually identified that there were 68 revolutionary soldiers that died in combat during the revolution as far back as we're going. So we're going to have a great representation of individuals from the county for revolutionary war, for monuments. The more modern wars are a little easier. World War I, II, Korea, et cetera. So, but they're doing a great job, and they designed it in such a way that essentially there's going to be granite slabs. That will be the final design. The rooms will be randomized so that if there needs to be an addition, that can happen.
Right, that's the main thing, right?
Sure.
All right, very good. Thank you. Yes.
As far as names go, Ira used the county commander for the American Legion.
Yeah.
And all the American Legion posts are submitting names. Sorry, he's put in like 600 names for it. Yeah. This guy's the sort of working on that. I know that. And I know the other posts in the county are all been notified.
And also the
initial
work
presentation. No, I think they're doing a really good job.
Everybody's coming together on this.
We're trying to do a lot of improvement there. The heat season just started. And one of the things that we did last year that I thought was very effective is that, in particular with the aging community, you might understand the heat world. It really flows to the Department of Social Services. And it was very hard for a lot of our seniors to kind of navigate that DSS world. So what we did is we set up a satellite office, a living office for the aging. So that we have DSS staff sitting behind the desk and as the students come in, they meet right there at the office for the aging. So, and it met several things for me. One, it was a better service, but also it allowed them to work with a caseworker in kind of a different setting. Sometimes it's harder to ask for assistance and give them a little bit more easier access to the system. I think we've done a pretty good job. We'll continue that program again this year. So, starting Monday, I've had staff there in the whole time through the season.
Based on last year, which was probably
about 7 years, anybody that was in the system must have been set re-enrollment forms. So it's hard to say. I mean, part of the problem is that there's a finite amount of money that's allocated to the county when those dollars are not run out. So we really, we're diligently to make sure that we
ran out last year.
We did, but it was right at the end of the season.
And again, we have great partners. We, you know, church community, some others, will also work with people that that can exhaust all of their available benefits. So there's some great charitable organizations in our community that kind of help us fill in the gaps a little bit. But we're pretty well coordinated on that, trying to make sure that we
meet that. And thank you again for your update. I appreciate it. And all the things that you have done. I mean, you've done a really great job with the, you know, with veterans and. And I really appreciate it.
I said if you could, but just figure out the seniors in and out easily in and out of the building.
All righty. We have one last resolution. I'm a little unsure why it came to us, but setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 5.
I'm not sure why both of these came here.
Yeah.
It's apprenticeship.
Yeah, I don't understand why
that works.
It's public works and laws and rules. Because it's a local law.
This is the apprenticeship.
What number is it?
Maybe the maybe because of the apprenticeship part.
Because of education and renovation stuff, because all those contracts that have gone out all include apprenticeship language for the 5 major projects.
Okay.
So it might be that, I really don't know.
No, this is part of the budget proposal. There's a significant structure investment, and as part of that, you got to make sure that any programs going on for This is setting a policy in particular for bridge projects over a certain threshold.
This has to do with bridge projects. That's why I had no idea why it's here.
So then it shouldn't be here.
We don't do bridges.
College does.
And we don't do windows either. Windows are bridges.
Speaking of bridges, how are we doing with that ramp?
Nowhere.
Okay. Well, that's a good response.
Should we be referring to it?
Comes to everybody. Public Works comes to the Ways and Means.
Well, you're going to go to Ways and Means because it's a, it's a dollar value. It's got to go to Laws and Rules because it's a local law. So you're changing local law, so.
That's good.
But I don't know why it would come here.
I don't either.
We'll pass it on. It can be stopped somewhere else.
Yeah.
All I have to do is fail in one committee and it fails. So,
I'm hoping that the legislature will see the true value in this law.
I really don't see any problem with what I'm on laws and rules, so.
We looked at a lot of these. We really tried to strike a balance here.
So I'll entertain a motion to accept this resolution since it's going to three other committees, actually.
Yeah. Second.
Wow. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Now there was a $5,000 amendment for community action. There was an amendment for the arts. I don't remember what the number was offhand. I don't have it with me.
It was up to raise it to $75,000.
Yes. It's actually approaching to what it once was back in 2009 or 8 or whatever.
These now go as part of the amendment process of the budget review.
Yeah, and I have
on
to go.
The legislative
I have to go before the committee to talk about it.
Okay.
Part of the issue will come is we wait to get things all. We look at the offsets because what we're trying to do is not raise taxes. We're going to cut taxes. Not only the department can take the taxes.
The offsets is the.
Yeah, they're offset by college charge.
The department when you look at the whole package, everybody has to grab the same offset, or, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. So is that it for us, then? There's no other...
And then there's the one moving CASA back into the line that it was before. It was in the legislative programs line,
right.
And it got put in DSS line. So we were basically moved to put it back into the legislative programs line. We checked and balanced its purposes, but it makes sense.
But certainly, I can, you know, the reason why we did it is among the fairly valued programs, what, too, on the executive side of the house. There's going to be a significant demand increase for the third judge, something that we value. You know, we wanted to do it. We knew that that the director of the Ways and Means had put out was that all the legislative programs items came in at zero. So you know, we couldn't imagine that the Ways and Means Committee would entertain a 33% increase of the funding. And so we built into the permanent funding schemes for the DSS. That's how we funded it. So certainly, you know, I don't think it really matters from where it was. Again, you know, there is a value of having a social services.
I appreciate that, but the only problem is there's not really a check on it. So, in other words, this creates a check by having in legislative programs, because if they call and they're having a problem, you know, I can help work that out. Yeah. And then not only that, but being in DSS, there's a little bit of a conflict there.
I would disagree with that, but I also could appreciate our thinking was that this puts it in kind of the permanent funding stream. It's going to get the natural increases that we do with all the not-for-profit contracts, whereas kind of being in the legislative budget, I mean, you're never going to see that kind of increase funded through the legislative.
The point is, we could always cut it when it came in the other one anyway.
But the truth of the matter is, you control all the appropriations in the budget. So, for example, our legislative affiliate has always favored some programming for eating disorders, which is something that, you know, the Department of Mental Health finds valuable. So to kind of take it out of the mix, kind of put it in that permanent stream. 2 years ago, we picked it up and put it in the Department of Mental Health. And again, it's permanent. You know, he calls every year, you know, where is it? It's there. And then he doesn't leave me, so he doesn't have something to check.
The problem that lies with this, though, Ken, is the other problem is that what happens is when it's in that thing, if I go in, the guy, in other words, the head of CASA, would not be able to call me up and talk to me unless it was okay.
Yeah, that's not what this does. Of course, I mean, he's
going to
do what
he's
going to
do. But when
they're having problems... Yeah. What happens when you and I aren't here in the future or whatever?
Well, I know that, but when they're having problems, you know, I was able to sit down and got the added social services in the room, and we worked out the problem. So, I mean, that's my case is that I'm a little leery of that not being able to happen.
Well, I mean, the problems that occurred were really because of legal issues.
Oh, I know that.
So they were resolved. In fact, I think, believe yesterday, we had reserved the right to appeal that in any case. We withdrew that opportunity to appeal that case yesterday, actually. So, I think that there's no issues. There's a formal agreement between the department and CASA now for operational. Because, again, obviously, there's concerns on both our side as well, too. And I think we resolved those issues, so.
All right, but anyway, I guess I need to entertain a motion to adjourn. We have a meeting up at Olive. I have to run up to, so I'm going to see if I can get there.
Budget.
I don't know if I'll be able to get there. You can get to Olive in 20 minutes. So, all those in favor of the adjournment? Yes? Okay. Thank you.